Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
Hello, everybody. Welcome into this very special edition of Dog Nation Daily, presented by our friends at Engineered Solutions of Georgia. My name is Brandon Adams, and as you can see behind me, we are in downtown New Orleans, getting ready for the Sugar Bowl, which will take place on New Year's night. Looking forward to talking to you about that here on our program today. A little bit different version of our show, so we certainly appreciate you accommodating us on the road as we try to bring you the best coverage of UGA here as it concludes the season. Busy show for us today. We're going to catch up with Mike Griffith here in New Orleans coming up in just a little bit. We'll react to some of the things that Kirby Smart had to say this morning, his final press conference ahead of the start of the Sugar Bowl, our final time to hear from Smart before the game. I'll recap some of what Smart had to say myself coming up here in just a moment. We'll also hear more from John Stinchcomb. Big response yesterday to Stinch's appearance on Dog Nation Daily. Stinch and I also do the Marlowe's matchup each week here on the Dog Nation video channels. And on Tuesdays, we typically have our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update here on our program. Well, John's going to kind of step in on that. We had a chance to record an interview not too long ago where John kind of talked about the absence of Isaiah Wilson, the absence of Andrew Thomas, the absence of Ben Cleveland, how that impacts the Georgia offensive line against the Baylor Bears coming up on Wednesday night. John's got strong feelings, obviously, as he expressed yesterday about the way in which the college football landscape is changing right now and what that means for Georgia, what that means for the future of the sport, and what John doesn't like about that in comparison to the way the college football used to be. A lot of you had very interesting things to say about what John said on our program yesterday. So as a follow-up to that, I wanted to give you a chance to hear more from John on that topic, including the position he knows best right there along the offensive line. Obviously, we'll also have room for plenty of your comments on video today as well. We may even include those as part of our podcast coverage here today, just to kind of make this wide-ranging in preparations for the final game for Georgia of the 2019 season, or as many people have said, in some ways the first game of the 2020 year, not just because of where it falls on the calendar year, but because of all the young players that could potentially be playing and potentially setting up some momentum that Georgia can take into a future season. Obviously, that's what it hopes is going to be true. I mentioned before that Kirby Smart did speak with reporters, myself included, a few minutes ago here this morning, and I want to give you a little bit of a recap of what Smart had to say, because obviously a lot of the hot topics that fans have been addressing is something that Smart took head on today, including the idea that Georgia is without a lot of players for this game. And some of these are injury related. Some of these are, we know and can confirm, are academic related. Others of these absences are really kind of unaccounted for. And we've been given very little information about why so-and-so might not be here or this player might not be there. But we've all seen at DogNation.com the long list of names that it is right now. Smart kind of downplaying that today, as you might expect, saying that the players who are playing the Sugar Bowl have known the entire time who would not be playing. So while some of this is maybe new and perhaps shocking to some of us, Smart said that's not shocking to the players themselves. He also says that for teams like Georgia that recruit guys with NFL aspirations, the idea of bowl games mattering less might be a part of the wave of the future, not just for Georgia, Smart would seem to suggest, but for all of college football included. Another interesting note that Smart brought up a little bit earlier today is, for instance, with Robert Beal, who's been reported to be in the transfer portal, but still practicing and going through the paces here with the UGA. Smart said today that the transfer portal, your presence in the transfer portal, isn't necessarily a statement that you're leaving. It's just a statement that you're sort of looking over all your options. Smart saying it's a dead period right now anyway, that a player that would look to transfer wouldn't be able to make contact with another program. So apparently Smart's all four guys who have pursued being in the transfer portal, maybe still sticking around here at a UGA, which is kind of an interesting point for Smart to make. As far as a couple of individual player names that Smart brought up today, one of those is Warren Erickson. Erickson's been rumored to potentially be the starter in place of Ben Cleveland at right guard, seeing the fact that Cade Mays is likely one of your starters at tackle. Well, Smart today during the press conference says that Erickson indeed has stepped up during these practices, complimenting the young man who we kind of think of as a center, but will be playing apparently guard in this Sugar Bowl coming up on Wednesday. Some compliments thrown the way of Warren Erickson from Kirby Smart a little bit earlier. Also, Smart highlighted Kenny McIntosh. You know the story here. Brian Herrien, as Mike Griffin, Dog Nation, has reported, not playing in the Sugar Bowl. DeAndre Swift is here, but his status is uncertain right now. We don't know how much he will play. So one of the potential young guys that opens up a chance for more opportunities for is potentially Kenny McIntosh. Smart mentioned McIntosh by name as a guy who's really responded well in these practices, a chance to be more involved in Georgia offense. Smart, though, did pump the brakes and says it depends on how the game goes and how much DeAndre Swift plays in terms of how much we might see from Kenny McIntosh. But nice to hear Smart mentioning McIntosh by name a little earlier this morning. A couple other notes that Smart brought up this morning when he spoke in his press conference, 9:30 Eastern time, 8:30 local time here in New Orleans. By the way, if you want to see the entire video for yourself, it will be on the Dog Nation video channels later on, including the Dog Nation YouTube page. So it just happened a moment ago. You'll get a chance to see this for yourself a little bit later on. A couple more notes from Smart that he says that Georgia was able to practice against itself more over the course of the last few days because the lack of depth available because of all the absences reduced the amount of scout teamwork Georgia was able to do, that Georgia did spend more time kind of going good on good, practicing against itself, so that contributed to more competition, Smart said during practice. And he did admit off the top that sometimes you don't really know what you're going to get from your team in bowl games, and in this case, Smart not referring to the players who are not here, but the fact that for both Baylor and Georgia, it's been such a long time since they have played. One final note from the Smart press conference, and I thought this was pretty interesting. Obviously, Kirby Smart, as an SEC figure, has been coming to Sugar Bowls for a long time. More than 10 years ago, he said his kids made their first appearance at a Sugar Bowl back when they were babies, and they took their first steps at the Sugar Bowl team hotel. So it speaks to the long-time connection between the SEC and the Sugar Bowl. And obviously, while this game in many ways is not the game that Georgia hoped to be playing in as December turns into January, it is a game with an incredible level of pageantry, an incredible level of tradition. And I, for one, can tell you that being here in New Orleans, while admittedly the presence of red and black probably not quite as strong as it was a year ago, or certainly as strong as it's been in previous years for Georgia, the hospitality of the Sugar Bowl committee has rolled out has been top-notch. And the people who have made the choice to be here, either from Waco or Athens or anywhere in between, they are certainly having a good time. And Smart's words today kind of a reminder of just how long that's been true for SEC teams coming here to the Sugar Bowl. So it's a very busy edition of Dog Nation Daily presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. As I said before, we're going to have a chance to hear from Mike Griffith here live in New Orleans coming up in just a little bit. John Stinchcomb coming up in a moment, too. Let me also remind you that our friends at Engineered Solutions of Georgia can provide you the solution you need when you're facing a problem, whether it be foundation-related, whether it be waterproofing-related. If you've walked down the basement, you see a wet spot, you notice that. That can be a sign of a bigger problem. Or if you, frankly, just see water coming in to your crawl space, something like that, that can be a real issue. If you see those horizontal cracks that show up on the concrete walls down around your house, that's also the kind of thing that you're going to want to make sure you get seen about. And the good thing about ESOG is, being a solutions-based company, sometimes that means simple solutions, easy fixes for small problems. Sometimes, though, it's more complicated, substantial work. And if that be the case, Engineered Solutions of Georgia is also the one you want to trust because they have two full-time engineers on staff. Very easy to get in touch with, very easy phone number to remember. Simply dial 678-ESOG-NOW. That's 678-ESOG-NOW. That'll get you in touch with Engineered Solutions of Georgia. All right, on video and podcast and radio today, live from New Orleans, a lot of your comments coming up, Mike Griffith later on. But for now, on more on the new look, different look offensive line, the challenge of getting ready for a bowl game when player motivations seem to be very different depending on which player you're paying attention to. John Stinchcomb has strong words about that. It's our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update here live from New Orleans for Dog Nation Daily's coverage of the Sugar Bowl. Hope you enjoy John Stinchcomb right now. Hey everybody, my name is Brandon Adams. Welcome into kind of a special edition of our Marlowe's matchup. We've done this all year long, presented by Marlowe's Tavern, with our buddy John Stinchcomb, the former UGA great, former All-American. It seems really appropriate to do this here now before the Georgia Bulldogs take on the Baylor Bears, the Sugar Bowl on January the 1st. And John, there's obviously a lot I want to talk to you about the game itself, but this is a game that takes place in New Orleans, a city you know well. You played here as part of the Sugar Bowl at the end of your career after the 2002 season. You played in New Orleans as a member of the New Orleans Saints. So you understand the city. You understand the heritage of the Sugar Bowl for the Georgia program in particular. And so I guess from that standpoint, before we get to the game itself and who Georgia's playing and how it hopes to win, what does New Orleans mean to you? What does the Sugar Bowl mean to you? And what should UGA fans appreciate about it?
Well, on a personal level, New Orleans has been great to me. It was a city where I played my last college game, and it was a big one for the University of Georgia. It was 20 years since our last SEC championship, and there's so much history involved with the Sugar Bowl that it's a meaningful game. And it's a fun place to be, not only as a player, which, you know, they try to keep you busy within reason and college age appropriate activities. but it's a fun place to go as a fan. And we went last year, and there's plenty to do in New Orleans for Georgia fans that are making the trek.
So I've covered a lot of bowl games, and I have some idea of what the schedule for players like, but admittedly, some of this is still kind of a mystery to me. So it seems like by the time you get to the end of the week, this is like a game like any other. Pretty hard curfew, get in bed, get some sleep, try to be ready for the game. Media obligations, for the most part, done by the time you get late in the week. But early in the week, there are some sanctioned bowl activities. How much free time are the players getting, and how much do these guys get a chance to enjoy a trip to a city like New Orleans? What's it like earlier in the week if you're a player?
Well, they try to create a balance. They want you to have activities that are planned that will keep you engaged and aren't boring as a player.
Yeah. I mean,
some places that you go that are more entertaining than others. New Orleans has no problem finding ways to keep the guys engaged, and they balance that with, you know, you're hopefully mature enough to handle yourself. And you know, the more restrictions come about when you're in New Orleans, their Harrah's is right down the road from where your hotel is, and usually there's some restrictions for the team in that capacity.
Yeah.
But they balance it with planned, organized activities, and then you get some free time. You always get the visit from, like, the sheriff of the town. You know, here's where you want to go. Here's where you never want to find yourself.
And I'm guessing a Sugar Bowl situation, that visit from the sheriff, probably a little bit more helpful, maybe a little bit more practical advice.
Absolutely.
As opposed to, if you're going to play a bowl game in Boise, Idaho, you may not need as much explanation about that. But in the Sugar Bowl, New Orleans being the way that it is, a big-time weekend destination, a little bit more specific about what to do and what not to do.
You need to know that cross street on Bourbon, where you don't want to go past it, or bad things really do happen. So, you know, you get a lay of the land. They come and give you a little debrief on the city, but that's usually pretty vital.
And obviously, as you head towards this particular Sugar Bowl, you know, for Georgia, it's the second trip here. Last year, I think that most people would say Georgia didn't play very well in this game. And that's not a unique to Georgia story. It's kind of the modern landscape of college football, where the college football playoff has, you know, kind of just sort of sucked so much into its orbit. It's such a big deal that sometimes the games below that have a way of feeling like less of a deal, less consequence. Also, the transfer portal kind of shows up this time of year. Academic stuff shows up this time of year. There are reports that, you know, Ben Cleveland's not going to be able to play in this game. We're obviously recording this, you know, before the week of the game. So the Cleveland thing is something we're aware of right now. It's a challenge, right? And, you know, we can all say, boy, I miss college football the way that it used to be. And to a certain extent, that's probably true for me. But it's also now imperative that you sort of find a way to navigate the modern landscape that the sport is in. But for coaches, in terms of getting ready for a game like this, knowing that games like this don't quite mean what they used to, that's a little bit of a, just a bluntly stated, challenge.
Let me tell you my personal opinion. I think bowl games have jumped the shark. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think there's three main categories as to how we've eroded the value of these games. Sugar Bowl used to be one of the most prestigious bowl games you can go to, and still is when it's a part of the college football playoff. So number one, the college football playoffs have devalued every other bowl game. Number two, there's so many bowl games that, you know, you barely break even on the season and you become bowl eligible.
Yeah.
And number three, what we've witnessed in the college realm of the season is over and now I'm going somewhere else, that's starting to be replicated in the players' department. So whether it's to go to the NFL or to save yourself as you enter the transfer portal, like what we saw from Justin Fields last year, this is no better than an exhibition game.
Yeah.
And the people who are profiting it are the bowls themselves.
Yeah.
I mean, it comes at an expense for the school. For a lot of schools, they lose money when they go to bowl games. So I think they really need to take a good hard look at the direction they want to take this.
You know, I appreciated Kirby Smart's perspective on this when he first talked about it. You know, sometimes Kirby can kind of have his own perspective on things. And I felt it was a good thing a couple of weeks ago when Smart kind of came out and sort of acknowledged what most people sort of believe to be true, that Georgia did not have its best foot forward this game a year ago. And Smart kind of insinuating that he learned some lessons from that in terms of, for some guys, it was the most important game of their season. You can think about Devaud Wilson and Azeez Ojulari coming back from injury as two of the names he may have been talking about there in terms of guys who really wanted to prove themselves. For other guys, he says the game didn't matter quite as much. And even though that's kind of a hard thing for a college football fan to hear, the fact that Smart's willing to openly embrace that idea and say, hey, we kind of live in a new age, and this game matters for some more than others, I actually think that's a step in the right direction for Georgia of, okay, well, let's find the guys it does matter for. For the young players who want to make a name for themselves, for the guys who just want to play for the pride and you know, love of the game, then let's figure out who that group of guys are and go out there and see what the Dogs can do in a game like this. Because while bowl games matter less to some, they still, for the most part, get incredibly, you know, good television ratings. The experience there in the side there in New Orleans is obviously still terrific. There's still a great opportunity for, you know, kind of a lot of that there. Let's go out there and see who wants to be here and see who wants to make the most of that opportunity.
Well, I think bowl games have become exploitive of the fans. Mm-hmm. Because anybody who watched the 2019 Georgia football team, there are folks that you expect to be out there.
Yeah.
And that's no longer the case.
Yeah.
I mean, you start with the offensive line alone, and I'm not talking about ineligibility or injury. What I'm talking about is guys that say, I no longer need to be a part of this team for mm-hmm. personal reasons. And that's selfish. It
yeah.
is what it is. If your team is playing, you've committed to that team. We all used to wear those shirts that have big team and little me.
Right.
And you don't own that shirt anymore. You have to turn that shirt back in
that's
because it's not right.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the way you started this season. You got to finish this season. Now, if you want to look at it and say, my season finished when we played in a conference championship, that's your prerogative, but you're wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think that's fair. Putting aside the fact that Andrew Thomas, Isaiah Wilson, two of the offensive linemen that won't be available to Georgia in this game, looking ahead to the future beyond that, with both these guys declaring to go to the NFL draft, this is one of those real big off-season stories. And obviously, as a former lineman yourself, former tackle yourself, this is, I know, a subject that you care deeply about. That question of what's next for Georgia's offensive tackle with no Thomas, with no Wilson, the Sugar Bowl becomes interesting to a certain extent because it's, you know, potentially an opportunity for a Cade Mays to give a dress rehearsal as maybe Georgia's starting left tackle next season. Jamari Salyer, you know, could be an inside guy, you know, could be a tackle. That was something that was talked about a lot for him during the offseason. You know, is he a replacement for Isaiah Wilson? Is it someone else, maybe someone that's not even on the roster yet, who competes for a tackle spot like that? Beyond just the Sugar Bowl, life without Isaiah Wilson and Andrew Thomas for Georgia, that's really going to take some getting used to, is it not?
It's going to be huge. And usually the way this plays out is you have an entire offseason and a spring practice and all that training camp
yeah.
to get guys ready. Because of those decisions alone, not to mention, I mean, at this time, Ben Cleveland's eligibility
right.
for the Sugar Bowl is up in the air
sure.
at best. But you're looking at three of your six main guys that has been a strength of
yeah.
this team that now you have to replace in a matter of weeks. They haven't had, whoever's going to step in, you don't have enough bodies having reps. That they're going to step in and play as a starting offensive lineman representing the University of Georgia in a bowl game.
Mm-hmm.
And that's due to the decisions made by individual players that say, the team may not be done playing, but I am.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, but if you're watching the Marlowe's matchup here with John Stinchcomb as we get ready for the Sugar Bowl here coming up, we'll have more with John on the subject of the Georgia offensive lineman here in a moment. Let me also remind you of this. We've been telling you about this during the holiday season as we kind of shift from a Christmas into a New Year's mode. Don't forget those holiday gift cards if you still need to buy them there from Marlowe's. A $50 Marlowe's gift card this time of year also is accompanied for you with a bottle of Michelle Brut sparkling wine, a great way to pop the bubbly and welcome in the new year. And Marlowe's is also willing to give you, if you get a $100 Marlowe's gift card, in addition to the Michelle Brut sparkling wine, they can also give you a complimentary $20 gift card there as well. So Marlowe's taking good care of you for the holiday season. Michelle Brut sparkling wine goes great as you get ready to ring in the new year and maybe even celebrating a victory for the Georgia Bulldogs against the Baylor Bears. We appreciate Marlowe's Tavern making the Marlowe's matchup possible all season long. And John, you know, back here on the subject of you know, of these offensive linemen, you know, these tackles, looking ahead to, you know, kind of what they might mean for Georgia, not having them in there, it's obviously you know, a real challenge for this game, but also moving forward, because these are guys that meant so much to this program, right?
Yes, and here's the good news is you have so many of
yeah.
those guys that had come out of college with the pedigree to
yeah.
to be able to replace them. Now, for the 2020 season, You have the entire offseason to get those reps and kind of filter back out. For each one of these guys, they should probably recognize what prevented them, other than being behind Wilson and Thomas, from being a starter for this team. So they can work on their craft and get ready for that opportunity for 2020, because a couple of guys are going to need to step up.
And a point I want to make about that is, you know, if you looked at Georgia going into the 2019 season, there was a big hole at wide receiver. And for someone like me who follows recruiting closely, there's a temptation when you see that big hole to say, I know that looks like a position of need. I know Georgia lost a lot off the 2018 team. But the fact of the matter is, Georgia recruited this guy and that guy and that guy. Everything's going to be fine. There's a temptation to sort of lean on recruiting as the solution to every problem. But what we saw is, for the team this season on the field in 2019, even though Georgia has recruited receiver well, sometimes you don't recruit well enough to overcome what's an obvious problem. And so as we head towards the 2020 season, I think it's important to remember that when it comes to replacing offensive tackles. Because Georgia's recruited so well, and because it's in the midst of recruiting so well right now, even for the 2020 class, the likelihood is that Georgia's going to find a replacement for Thomas. Maybe not quite as good right away, but eventually a capable player. The same thing for Wilson, too. Someone that can step in and be a capable right tackle, much the same way that Isaiah Wilson has been for Georgia the last couple of years. But I'm not going to be flippant in saying, well, recruiting solves everything and it's next man up. Sometimes complicated issues in your mind in the preseason turn out to be complicated issues for Georgia on the field. And while Georgia's got Matt Luke, who's a capable offensive line coach, and a lot of talent waiting in the wings, some of that on its way to a campus as part of the 2020 class, this is still an issue that you can't just wave a magic wand and say, oh yeah, recruiting just handles all that. That's going to take care of itself. Not for the Sugar Bowl, not for the 2020 season.
Yes, and Andrew Thomas is a unicorn. I mean, not many guys can step right off a high school football field and become a starter in the SEC and play at the level that he did from day one for the University of Georgia. So those are rarities. Now, the good news is you've had guys in this system for a couple years now across the board, specifically talking about offensive line group, that have been able to develop and practice against SEC caliber defensive ends and outside linebackers and nose guards and tackles. They've seen enough in practice reps that hopefully they're further along, because if you're relying on that four or five star guy to walk in every time off the street and start for you, you're in a bad spot. Now, the strength of what Coach Pittman was able to do is that each year he's been able to get two, three, sometimes four guys be a part of a class that you think and project, hey, this guy can be a starter for us down the road and play at a high level. So the cupboard isn't bare, but it's going to be about development. Offensive line, I was talking to a scout when I was in New Orleans. Offensive line is a position group that you constantly have to hone your craft. It's not, you know, no offense, but for running backs and wide receivers, if you're a great athlete, we can find situations to get you on the field to make you successful. Mm-hmm. Offensive line isn't that position. It's more about consistency. So you have to be able to at least platoon in, whether it's run, pass. We have to be able to rely on you, and that means progressing as a player and getting better overall. And luckily for the University of Georgia, for the past few years, we've put enough horses in the stable that you have to feel much better than we would in years past, BA, of being able to replace. Andrew Thomas is special. I personally still believe that Isaiah would have been better served having come back a year, and he would have made himself more money by doing so, but that ship has sailed.
Yeah, it's the Marlowe's matchup. It seems appropriate. We'll spend a couple of minutes on the matchup, so we'll finish up by talking about the Baylor Bears here, the opponent, in just a moment. Let me squeeze in one more thing before we get there. Presumably, as we're recording this, Jake Fromm will not have made an announcement yet about his future. And obviously there's good reason to think that he might come back to Georgia for senior season. There's at least a possibility out there that Fromm might reconsider that, move on in the NFL. The analysis he'll get back from the NFL folks about his draft status will obviously go a long way towards determining that. You're an offensive lineman, you're not a quarterback, but you can kind of put yourself in the mode of a player here. What do you think Fromm's process is like as he gets ready to make this final decision about his future, and for Georgia maybe needing to act quickly to bring in another quarterback to go along with the guys already in the competition to replace Fromm or Fromm to leave? What are these next few days going to be like for him? What's the next few months going to be like for Georgia if Fromm lets you know that he's leaving?
Right. Well, I think for him personally, he's focused on the Sugar Bowl. Mm-hmm. And that's what good leaders do. They focus on the next task at hand. And there will be time that as soon as the Sugar Bowl is over, where you're going to assess, what are my opportunities? What's it going to look like if I do try to prepare myself for the NFL draft? Where do you think my stock is going to be? And they can give you those ranges, and they're fairly accurate. Mm-hmm. There's obviously opportunities to improve and really digress from what they're projecting you to be. I think we've seen that from Georgia players in the past of, you know, they have a gauge of where they think they'll be, mm-hmm. and some improve because of deeper eval of film, or the combine is obviously an example, their pro days. But you've got a pretty good idea of where you're going to be. For Jake, he's looking at it as, one, what are my opportunities in the NFL? Two, what's it look like if I come back? Can I be successful? Can I move my stock higher? Can I help leave a legacy, help the team? Can I leave a legacy at the University of Georgia and build on something that he has created over the past 3 years, which is he's been an integral part of a program that has played for national championships and represented the SEC East for 3 straight years. So I think for quarterbacks, it might be a little different than, say, a running back who says, my shelf life is already expiring.
Yeah.
And for quarterbacks, you see in this day and era that 2 decades is not unheard of.
I want to talk about Baylor here for a moment. That's Georgia's opponent in the Sugar Bowl. It's part of our Marlowe's matchup with John Stinchcomb. Now, listen, to be completely honest, you know, we're not watching every second of a Baylor Bear season. But when you do look what Matt Rhule has been able to do there in a short period of time in Waco, you have to be impressed by that. And I think one of the things that speaks to the quality of Baylor as a team, maybe more than anything else, is what it's been able to do in road games this season. Let me give you a couple of examples. In October, early October, go to Kansas State. Remember, Kansas State beat Oklahoma in its own stadium this year, but Baylor goes into Manhattan, wins that game 31-12. At Oklahoma State there as well, tough place to play in Stillwater, won that game 45-27. So really, among the most impressive things for Baylor this season was how it performed against, at the time, ranked opponents on the road. Went out there and got some really good wins. Rhule's also one of those guys that's been talked about as a future NFL coach. He may even get some overtures for that at the end of this season. Bears very good defensively. This is a different kind of team than like the Art Briles Baylor era, where it was just enough defense and a lot of offense. If anything, it's the opposite now. They're just enough offensively, but really one of the really, really good defenses. This is not a typical Big 12 team from that standpoint. They're legitimately good defensively. They are okay offensively. And I think, and this is not just lip service, I think a really tough opponent for Georgia. Regardless of Georgia's level of focus for the game, Baylor's hard to beat no matter how ready you are for the game.
I agree with that assessment. I think Baylor comes into this game with a talented football team, number one, and number two, they're motivated. This is a big opportunity and stage for them, whereas Georgia might come in and say, we weren't able to hit the goals that we had set at the beginning of the year. So that's something to be aware of. To the point of the talent on their team, you watch Baylor film. I haven't watched a lot of it, but I watched it enough to see that defensive line for Baylor.
Mm, yeah.
They've got 2 studs.
Yeah.
Like, those guys make plays against everybody.
Right.
And that's no longer a position of strength for us. So that's a big concern in an area. I know I'd be watching it anyway as an offensive line, defensive line battle. But Baylor's defensive front, their defense is effective, and it starts up front with 2 guys.
Of course, the most pivotal moment of the season for Baylor was losing the 28-3 lead against Oklahoma in a game that's played in Waco. Sooners came back and won that game, also won the rematch there as well. So in a lot of ways, Baylor will be remembered for, and I hate to say it this way, but almost choking away an opportunity to really put themselves in the college football playoff. The other way to look at that, though, is over the course of 8-plus quarters against the Sooners, they really, you know, hung, you know, tight for the entirety, 34-31 in the regular season, 30-23 in the overtime. Oklahoma back in the playoff again this year, and for 8-plus quarters, including overtime, Baylor was kind of right there with them, lost both those games. But certainly people have respect for Oklahoma, and Baylor was a very tight opponent for Oklahoma in 2 games this year.
You look at their championship game, conference championship game, Baylor, if you don't have to be a Baylor fan to conclude, they probably should have won that game. They had Oklahoma on the ropes, and it took some late heroics by Jalen Hurts and the rest of that team to come back from a game that they had already lost. So Baylor didn't finish the drill, so to speak, but man, they were in great position to take away a conference championship and knock Oklahoma out of the college football playoffs.
Final thing for you, John. You know, as much as I want bowl games to matter, ultimately the story of the Georgia season, I think, is going to be told regardless of the outcome against Baylor. So if I were to ask you, how will you remember the 2019 season for Georgia? What has mattered to you more than anything else? I mean, what's your overall takeaway from what Georgia did this season, at least based on what we know of the Dogs right now? Top five team in the country, won the SEC East for a third year in a row, back in a major bowl again for a third straight year. Lots of nice accomplishments, but still below the standard that I think that Kirby Smart has, both with his own actions and in his own words, set for the program. So how do you define the 2019 season? How will you remember it?
Well, I think it's great that we've raised the bar to the point where a third straight SEC East championship or representation in the SEC leaves a little bit of a nasty taste in your mouth. I think the SEC championship game, the way it played out, leaves something to be desired for this team. The defensive unit was special this year. And I think one of the things that stuck out to me, it wasn't one individual player, but that entire unit played at a very high level, to the point where many were talking about, me included, is this the best defensive unit as a whole that Georgia has ever fielded? On the opposite side of the ball, it seemed to me, and I'm not alone in this, I'm sure, as a frustrating year. Offensively,
There's
so many pieces that you never really found that rhythm. You couldn't find an efficiency to the productivity, especially late in the season, to where, you know, that's what's going to stick out in my mind as you look back at 2019. A truly special defensive group and an offensive group that just wasn't complimentary of the level of play that defense provided.
This will be our final Marlowe's matchup broadcast of the season, getting ready for the Sugar Bowl here. John, I can tell you how much fun it's been for us to have your expertise on this show, talking about these things, getting ready. We really appreciate you sharing your time with us. It's been great to hear from you on Georgia football here during the Marlowe's matchup all season long.
Well, it's a pleasure. I love the game. I love Georgia football, and more importantly, I love the fan base.
Yeah,
I
mean,
as a member of them, when we do these Marlowe's matchups and we get to be out there with the fans, they're engaged, they care about the team and the individuals, and it's just always great to be a Bulldog.
By the time many of you see this, it'll be after Christmas. That means you've gotten your gifts, and let's face it, some of you didn't get what you wanted. So maybe the thing to do is buy yourself a gift, and if you're looking for the perfect thing for you as a Georgia fan, let me also suggest the hover helmet right here to my left. You see it spinning around, and it has spun around on our desk here for the Marlowe's matchup all season long. When you go to hoverhelmets.com/dognation and you use the promo code dognation, you can save 20%. So a great chance to take advantage of that. How about that? Look at the close-up shot. You talk about final Marlowe's matchup of the season. We're bringing out all the effects. Close-up on the hover helmet here. Very impressive stuff. Hoverhelmets.com/dognation. Use the promo code dognation. You can save 20% and make a great, great addition to your office or your family room, your basement, whatever else. Check out the UGA hover helmet there. Y'all enjoy the game, Georgia versus Baylor. We've got more for you live from New Orleans, including a little bit more from me right now. Really good stuff there from John Stinchcomb here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. We're live here in downtown New Orleans getting ready for the Sugar Bowl. I got Mike Griffith joining us here as well. A lot to talk to Mike Griffith about. He was with us this morning when Kirby Smart met with reporters. We'll certainly address all of that. Let me also remind you about my friends at Kroger. And if you go to DogNation.com this morning, you can find out more about this. Kroger Chef Jr. is back for 2020. And boy, in the month of January, this is going to be really fun. On both January 11th and the 25th, Kroger Chef Jr. is going to be featuring waffle sandwich bites. Now, that sounds really good and a really great experience for your kids to learn how to make those for themselves with Kroger Chef Jr. Also, when you sign up, it includes a recipe card, an apron, a chef hat, a recipe box, and, of course, a pastry brush, and so much more. Go to KrogerChefJr.com. That's all spelled out, J-U-N-I-O-R, KrogerChefJr.com, to find out more information about that. Mike Griffith here from the Media Hotel in downtown New Orleans. We had a chance to hear from Kirby Smart a little earlier today. A couple of interesting takeaways, I think, and maybe most significant for me, the two players that Smart didn't mention by name when asked about guys we haven't seen as much of. who have maybe impressed during bowl practices. A name to start there with was running back Kenny McIntosh. Now, Smart was quick to kind of caveat this of it depends on how the game goes, how much we see him. It depends on the health status of DeAndre Swift, which I think you and I both are probably assuming we see less as opposed to more of Swift. But to hear Smart compliment the work that Kenny McIntosh was done during these bowl practices leading up to the game on Wednesday, for a Georgia fan who's kind of trying to decide how excited he is about this game, maybe a chance to see more of Kenny McIntosh is certainly an example of something you could enjoy there.
Yeah, I think so. And when you look at how Baylor plays defense, you know, they're really known for their pass rush prowess, and the way to attack them is with the run game. The run game is going to be very important, B.A., whether or not DeAndre Swift plays or not, and I really don't think he will. And if he does, as B.A. said, very limited. Kenny McIntosh, a guy that can kind of do it all, cutback ability. He's learned to catch the ball a little bit better out of the backfield. Kirby also mentioned we might see a lot more of James Cook. So, and we all know what Zeus can do out of the backfield, Zamir White. So you're right, B.A. I think that ground game is going to be very important.
Yeah, I mean, let's face it. You know, the Sugar Bowl in some respects is a little bit of a tough sell. It's a tough sell for the Georgia players, and Smart has certainly been asked a lot of questions about that. For some fans, maybe a bit of a tough sell, too. Walking around New Orleans last night, being on Bourbon Street, you saw less red and black than you are used to seeing from Georgia when it comes to a game like this, even less than a year ago when it was also number five team in the country, having just missed out on the playoff. So for some Georgia fans, they're trying to decide, well, what's this game all about? You know, what is my favorite team going to put on display on TV? Well, McIntosh and Cook and guys like that who, as Smart cleared up when he arrived in New Orleans, will be able to play. Those kind of guys make the game pretty fun. And I said this on Dog Nation Daily from Atlanta yesterday before we left for New Orleans. I'm actually semi-excited about the game from a fan's perspective, but also from just kind of like that analytical curiosity perspective. I want to see some of these young guys play, and I want to see what they bring to the table. And, you know, in flashes, McIntosh has kind of shown you a little bit of a spark. James Cook's one of those guys that Georgia might be building a lot of its offense around next season, obviously in competition with other running backs, including some of the 2020 signees who could be on the way. But let's see a little bit of those guys showcased on Wednesday night. That, to me, is a pretty good reason to watch a football game.
Yeah, and just the Georgia brand. I mean, it's you know, the G is going to be on display. It's got a national television audience, the national stage. You're the only game on television at that time on New Year's Day. And everybody's watching. And whether or not your best players or your starters are there or not, it doesn't matter. It's a representation of what Georgia football is, where the program is at, and where it's heading. And let's you know, for a minute, give these seniors some credit. I mean, you know, boo-hoo, you didn't make the playoff. Listen, you can't find another Georgia football team in history that is going to, with a group of seniors, that exits with three straight wins over Tennessee, Auburn, Georgia Tech, and Florida. It hasn't happened. Now, Herschel's group may have almost did it. They didn't get to play Tennessee that third year. But this is a senior group that's taking care of business in their rivalries. They've earned another top five ranking. As Kirby said today, they were in the college football playoff game until this one. So I think this senior group has represented well. Listen, I've talked with these guys the last week, B.A. This is a different scene than last year. Now, they're not as well-stocked as last year, but the guys that are here have a lot more enthusiasm, and they've got something to prove because they hear what everybody's saying. They're hearing people say they're not going to show up. They're hearing people say they can't win without these guys, and they got something to prove. I sense a lot of energy from Georgia and Baylor as well, as you heard from Matt Rule this morning.
Double R on YouTube mentions Zamir White. That's another one of those running backs that you'd like to be able to see more of. And this is one of the things I said going in the SEC Championship game, that yes, Georgia does have Kendall Milton coming up the class of 2020, and it might add another running back before the recruiting process is all done. That's all true. But, you know, White's former number one running back for the class 2018. James Cook was a elite recruit himself from that same class. These are guys that you might be building huge portions of your running game around next season to get a chance to get a little bit more of a harbinger of that before this season's done. I think Double R is right to also mention Zamir White in a conversation like that.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and what Zamir does best is the north and south and running. And, you know, we had a chance to talk with Zamir after the SEC title. You know, here's a guy who's worked so hard. He's still in the training room every day twice trying to get those knees a little looser. May not see the cutting that he would like to do, but as far as getting downhill and moving the pile, that's something Zeus does. This could be his kind of game. And then James Cook is a guy who has to evolve. You know, I don't think he got the ball enough this year. Kirby talked a lot about that. They would have liked to have used him more. But listen, when you got a guy like Swift, you can't blame James Coley for wanting to put in his hands as much as possible. But to your point, now we get to see what these other guys can do. And I still think Kenny McIntosh, he could end up being the best of the three.
Yeah.
What glimpses we saw of Kenny, he was dynamic with his ability to cut, run, and break away speed. So these are big opportunities, as you said, primetime opportunities for these guys to showcase themselves.
Another name that Kirby Smart mentioned by name today. By the way, you're watching a live edition of Dog Nation Daily presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. Mike Griffith, good enough to spend some time with us. We're in New Orleans getting ready for the Sugar Bowl on Wednesday. But another name that Smart mentioned by name moments ago, and you'll get a chance to see this full video for yourself on the Dog Nation video channels later on today, that's Warren Erickson. Erickson's been rumored as being a potential starter in this game. And, you know, Mike, you know the story with the offensive line. Georgia fans themselves have felt good about, I would say, seven linemen this year. Georgia had its five, you know, consistent starters toggling between Cleveland and Mays at that one spot. But adding in Jamari Salyer into that mix, that's seven linemen that you felt that you had pretty strong depth with. And when Justin Schaefer was healthy, he was probably your number eight guy. Schaefer's still dealing with a neck injury. Cade Mays is going to be drawn into duty at a tackle spot. Salyer's going to be starting at likely one of the guard spots. So one way or another, you're going to be fourth to sort of get that ninth man involved, right? You're going to sort of be sort of forced to deal with that. And I said guard for Salyer. He may be the right tackle, but nonetheless, you're going to have to get that ninth man involved. We didn't know, would it be Xavier Truss kind of pushing Salyer back to a tackle spot? Would it be a guy like Warren Erickson? There had been some debate about that. Hearing Smart say what he said today about Erickson would seem to confirm that he may be that next guy kind of called into duty. And I think that's another thing for Georgia fans, given the fact that next season it's got to find a way to play without Andrew Thomas, without Isaiah Wilson, finding out a little bit more about the depth that Georgia has at its offensive line. That's another curiosity, for the Dogs in this game. I don't know that UGA is going to be capable of answering that question emphatically, just given the fact this group hasn't played together very much, but it is certainly a source of curiosity.
Yeah, you know, and you're right. Kirby mentioned Warren Erickson. You know, we've heard about Xavier Truss. Who knows? We'll see how this lineup goes with Cade at left tackle, Solomon at left guard, Hill at center, Warren Erickson at right guard, and Jamari Salyer at right tackle. Plan B, maybe you put Truss in at one of the tackles, and as you said, move Salyer into right guard if Warren has a problem. So they've got a plan there. You know, talking with Solomon Kinley yesterday, though, BA, he said, you know, Georgia's done a lot of practicing with Cade at left tackle and as well as Salyer at right tackle. So that's not the new is Erickson, and to me, that's what it sounded like Kirby was the most concerned about. I think they know that DeAndre Swift isn't going to play or will be extremely limited. So they're past that. The J.R. Reed thing, a lot of guys have played in the secondary. I think they feel good that Lewis Cine can play very good back there, or Christopher Smith or Otis Reese, I think. But the guard spot against this Georgia, against this Baylor defense, BA, which is the only defense in the country with more than 40 sacks and 30 takeaways.
Yeah.
That's the concern, and to your point, that's the test for the Georgia offensive line depth.
We're going to get more comments coming up here on a special edition of Dog Nation Daily presented by Engineered Solutions Georgia. I also want to remind you, as bowl season rolls on, we head towards NFL playoffs this weekend. One of the fun things to do to make the games a little bit more interesting is get some action in on the game. That's what my friends at MyBookie provide you a chance to do. And when you sign up for the first time, they're going to give you a big first deposit bonus. You can get your first deposit doubled. You can get up to $1,000. But you've got to use the promo code DOGNATION. That's all one word. Spell the way it's supposed to be, DAWG. Use the promo code DOGNATION there at MyBookie. Then after that, you play, you win, you get paid. You get the big first deposit bonus. You get the action down on the games. But you've got to use the promo code DOGNATION. So find MyBookie online. Let the browser do the work for you. Just type it right in there. The internet will do some magical things for you. Then use the promo code DOGNATION at MyBookie. All right, so we've heard from John Stinchcomb on the show today. And John, as a not just a alumnus of UGA, but as a stakeholder of the program and a guy reflective, of, I think, of a lot of the opinions of the people who are watching and listening right now, there is some concern about the guys who are not here and the fairly specious reasons we've been given, or maybe in some cases no reason at all for why some of those players aren't here. Now, Mike, as a fan, I will tell you that I am more than willing to just sort of enjoy the game for what it is, enjoy the players who are here, and kind of find some interest in that. I'm more than willing to do that. However, I also have some respect for the fans who are like, wait a second, I don't know that these questions have been answered to my satisfaction about why so-and-so is not here and why this guy is not here. You know, we're talking about more than a dozen names of Georgia players who aren't really accounted for. And in some of these cases, we've been given no official reason for why they're not here. For me, Mike, this ends up being tantamount to an unforced error by Smart. By saying so little about who's not here, by doing so little to clear up the confusion about why this guy's not here, that guy's not here, I think that Smart has accidentally put a cloud of suspicion over the entire team. I think that's a mistake. And I think that Smart had he been more forthright about this, I think could have cleared up some of the confusion, which in turn could have maybe lessened some of the disappointment for some Georgia fans about the fact that Georgia seems to be dealing with the problem of player absences more so than some of the other, certainly SEC teams. Derrick Brown's playing for Auburn in its bowl game. Alabama's, I think, only missing a couple guys for its bowl game. Georgia seems to be dealing with this more than other programs are. I think had Smart taken this issue verbally on more head-on, I think there's a chance that Georgia fans would feel a little better about the situation now.
Yeah, well, Georgia fans might feel better, but I don't think it would look as good nationally. You know, everything Kirby does is calculated. And if you make it a story that Georgia's missing 12 guys that have started games, that's a national story. Hey, everybody, look over here. Georgia's got half the guys that are either academically ineligible or failed drug tests. Not the storyline that Kirby wants to pitch. So he buried it. And I didn't like it as a reporter because, like you, I want to keep Georgia fans informed. I have questions. I want to know why Brian Herrien isn't here. I want to know why Devod Wilson isn't here. I want to know, I wanted to know earlier that J.R. Reed wasn't going to be here. Why two of the four permanent captains chose not to be here. Maybe don't name your permanent captains until after the bowl game when you can find out who stays to lead through it all. But Kirby recognizes, how's this thing going to come out? The more he talks about it, B.A., the more it overshadows the players that are here and the focus on the Sugar Bowl. So why I myself, as a reporter, I did not like that. I want to inform as much as I can. Georgia fans want to know everything. But in terms of keeping Georgia out of the national spotlight for what would be an embarrassing or negative situation with all these players missing and keeping the focus on the players here, I think those are the objectives that Kirby wanted to do. Protect the program's image nationally and focus on the players that are here at the Sugar Bowl.
Matt Talley watching us on Facebook. And by the way, we appreciate all of you being with us in this special edition of Dog Nation Daily presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia live from New Orleans. Mentioned someone who is here, not a player, but a coach, Matt Luke. Get a chance to watch Luke closely in the open practice the other day. And I'm curious to get, I know we've all read your words about this at DogNation.com, but I'm curious to hear more of a follow-up from you on that of what's it like watching Luke during practice. This is a guy whose personality is probably different from Sam Pittman's, but maybe similar in the fact that I think there's a magnetism about Luke that probably rivals Pittman. Pittman was also a guy that when I would watch Georgia practices was generally speaking pretty laid back. Having a chance to see Luke working one-on-one with some of these offensive linemen, that position group is going to be key for Georgia in this game, just given the fact there's so many new names getting starts. What did you think of getting a chance to watch Luke during practice?
Just the energy was unbelievable. You went from having your favorite uncle coaching you to having your big brother. And, you know, Matt's a lot younger guy, you know, and he brings a lot more energy. And let's face it, he brings more star power. Matt Luke was the head coach at Ole Miss. Matt Luke has been one of the best offensive line coaches in the country when he worked under David Cutcliffe and when he was on a Philip Fulmer staff. And he's worked with Rich Rodriguez and Hugh Freeze. So you bring some star power in with Matt Luke in addition to a younger guy who's more energetic. The players have immediately related to him. You know, he tells them that he's a fat guy like them and he's got to lose weight. And
hey, listen, after Christmas, I think we're all right there in the same boat. At least I know I feel like I am.
But you can tell the players really like him. I mean, you know he wants to work fast. He wants things done correctly. I think the biggest thing I picked up on is the players said, whereas Pittman was more of a slow down, let's work this out, let's make sure. Matt's more of a, hey, let's keep moving fast and we'll improve on the run. So there's a little bit of a difference there. And then I think the energy level, you know, he's sprinting down the field when they're scoring touchdowns on passes and high-fiving receivers in the end zone. So he's brought a lot of energy, and I think that was really needed, B.A., because I think Sam Pittman brought a lot to that offensive meeting room in terms of charisma and positive energy, and I think Matt Luke brings that as well. You have to hope that Georgia can keep him for 2 or 3 years because I do think he'll be a head coach again.
We've got more with Mike Griffith coming up here, Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of George. Also around this time in each show, we should go cruise around the SEC, courtesy of Royal Caribbean. We won't do that so much today. We'll keep our attention on the Sugar Bowl, Georgia and Baylor. But I will remind you about the really fun things coming up for Royal Caribbean here in the 2020 calendar year, including a big-time game changer, the first Quantum Ultra-class ship that's going to set sail in the U.S. and Europe. I'm talking about the Odyssey of the Seas. It's going to be setting sail from Fort Lauderdale next fall and then Rome in the summer of 2021. This is a gigantic, beautiful vessel with the Ripcord by iFly, a skydiving simulator, the North Star, which is like a jewel-shaped capsule, hundreds of feet in the air that gives you a chance to have these 360-degree views views and see all the beautiful surroundings. Unbelievable, like the Dog Nation favorite Playmaker Sports Bar and Arcade. This is going to be a fantastic, fantastic facility. The Quantum Class Ultra ship from Royal Caribbean, Odyssey of the Seas, coming to Fort Lauderdale next fall, and then Rome after that in 2021. If you want to find out more about this beautiful, beautiful ship, you can contact your own travel advisor or the Cruise and Vacation Authority, which is, it can be found 800-326-4971. Dial 800-326-4971. That'll get you in touch with the Cruise and Vacation Authority, but let them know you heard about us and them right here on Dog Nation Daily. We appreciate our friends at Royal Caribbean allowing us to cruise around the SEC each and every day here on our program. Obviously, great stuff there. By the way, speaking of the SEC, I guess the one big story last night, Florida kind of got all it wanted from Virginia, ended up winning the game, and Florida will win a New Year's Six Bowl for the second consecutive year under Dan Mullen, but a little bit of a challenge from the Cavaliers last night.
Yeah, you know, hey, that's the team that Georgia opens up with, right? That's so right. That's in the back of your mind. The whole bowl scene, BA, the perception, I think Kirby kind of might have taken a jab at Florida today indirectly when he said, you know, hey, we're excited we get to be here and play a team we respect that we know comes from a really good conference. And I kind of thought, is he talking about Virginia coming from the ACC versus Baylor being one play away from the college football playoff? And, but no doubt about it, you know, Virginia is they're a team on the rise. They're a well-coached program, and I think it's going to be a test for Georgia because of all the newness. And that is why this game does have some importance, because you are getting a head start. I do think Cade Mays will be the left tackle next year. And I do think Jamari Salyer will be the right tackle next year. We still don't know if Solomon Kinley's coming back at left guard, but Warren Erickson could be the right guard. And you could see four or five guys, or maybe this is the starting line next year if Solomon comes back. And as we talked about, the running backs, you know, Swift is gone. He may be gone now and just, you know, kind of here in spirit and uniform, and his teammates appreciate him being here, by the way. But and George Pickens will be the go-to guy. I can't believe we haven't even talked about him. Yeah. You want to talk about the X factor for this game, BA. It's going to be George Pickens. And I was very encouraged, and I'll have a story up. Right now I got the Kirby Smart story up. If you want to read what Kirby said and how he's turned his team around, you need to go to dognation.com and check that out right now. But one of the things I was very encouraged by was when Jake was asked about George. We know that typically Jake is a very reserved guy. Oh, yeah, he's doing great, and this guy's doing good. But when it came to George, he actually stopped and laughed. He goes, man, he keeps you young. And he's fun. You know, he's getting better. And I thought to myself, is this a sign that maybe Jake's coming back? Maybe Jake, this would be a reason for Jake to come back. When you look at Jake's decision, why would Jake Fromm come back? He's missing both of his offensive tackles. His go-to receiver, Cager, is gone. He's got to deal with a whole bevy of freshmen that have to learn the offense. It'll be limited. The one guy that could sell him on coming back is George Pickens. That would make Jake Fromm think, you know what, I can have a bigger year and do more things with a guy like this if we up-tempo.
Well, I'm not sure what the impact it's going to have on Fromm, but I do agree with you, and I talked about this a little bit yesterday, is that Pickens' story, I think, has kind of flown under the radar a little bit. Now, with Georgia fans, he's one of the most talked about players of all, but there's been so much talk about how bad the overall passing game's been for Georgia and how much the wide receivers have taken the blame for that. Under the radar, George Pickens' numbers for a true freshman receiver have actually been pretty spectacular. Seven touchdowns, more than 500 yards receiving. That puts him almost on exactly the same line that Mecole Hardman would have been for 2018 as a for instance on this. So when you look at like real success stories, even in the midst of a position group that struggled, George Pickens' freshman season I think has been a real success story for Georgia. Now, it's been a while since we've seen him be able to play a full game, suspended for a half in each of the last two games that Georgia played. So from that standpoint, you know, he's got some stuff to clean up, maybe some rough edges off the field. But on the field, when you start looking ahead to one of the things that would make you feel good about 2020, the fact that Georgia has, I think, more of a legitimate go-to game-breaking receiver in Pickens for a sophomore season, hopefully get a chance to have that put on display on Wednesday night. But this is, on paper, the best receiver that Georgia has had in the Kirby Smart era. And the fact that he's done what he's done as a true freshman, I think, sets the expectations up high for 2020. And then one more thing, I'll let you talk. I think it also, for James Coley, who says, hey, you know, we got to find a way to, like, you know, get more out of some of these players out wide and, you know, kind of do things, open up the offense a little bit more. Well, Pickens is your guy. I mean, this is his 14th game of his college career. He's essentially a sophomore now. Find a way to do that against a good defense on Wednesday. That's another reason I think that this game should be fun and worth watching. Can Georgia, with Jake Fromm, whether he's here in 2020 or not, can you do something for a full 60 minutes to take advantage of George Pickens? There is no Lawrence Cager. There is no Dominic Blaylock. Can you find a way to scheme Lawrence George Pickens open in this game? I think that's a great chance for James Coley to show that he's got good things in mind for 2020 by doing something against Baylor with Pickens on Wednesday night.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. You've had 12, 13 bowl practices now, so it's kind of its own season, right? It's not really a continuation of the regular season. The bowl season's kind of its own. One of the players said this is like a different team. So I think that's pretty interesting in terms of what George Pickens can do in this game. And, you know, with Lawrence Cager on the field, Jake's throwing 71% completion rate. Without him, he's 47. So having a guy that you can trust, having a guy with a big catch radius that Jake can trust to run the right route, to get open, that's a lot of what James Coley talked about. And also, a lot of the offense was geared around DeAndre Swift. Why wouldn't you put the ball in the hands of your best football player? Well, Swift's not going to be there. And maybe George Pickens will be the most dangerous skill position player. Maybe we'll see more than 50 catches next year.
Got a couple more minutes here. Let me address something that Christy brings up on YouTube, whether the lack of fan enthusiasm around the Sugar Bowl and players not being here, if that's going to negatively impact UGA recruiting. You know, Smart talked about something about that today, and I thought it was kind of interesting, essentially saying that with the prevalence of NFL aspiring players in the Georgia roster, that guys missing bowl games may become more of a commonality for Georgia in the future, maybe the rest of college football there as well, which I think, Mike, does speak to Christy's question, which is, Georgia's recruiting players who want to play in the NFL, and the thing that's attracting them to Georgia right now is the ability of Georgia to get them to the NFL, the relationships they form with position coaches who they're going to trust to get them to the league. I don't know that anything is more important right now for Georgia's recruiting momentum than the fact that, you know, Zach Evans might believe that Dell McGee is a running back that can get him to the NFL, if that's indeed the choice that Evans makes when he makes his college announcement, that Keely Ringo believes that Kirby Smart and Charlton Warren are coaches that can get him to the NFL, if that's indeed the decision that Ringo makes. Darnell Washington with Todd Hartley, and on you go. But these guys are not making decisions on the basis of which cool bowl game they're going to get to go to, like that maybe used to be in college football. They're making those decisions now on the basis of, can my position coach and can this coaching staff get me to the NFL? And the recruiting momentum that Georgia has maintained, that's the engine, I think, that drives that, along with the relationships.
Sure, and Kirby said he may not agree with these decisions, but he still supports his players. And it's to each their own. Different players feel a different level of accountability to their school and still play. Other guys may feel differently, and they can, you know, but they'll be judged. You know, there's consequences either way. Some Georgia fans are going to be upset about it and go, you know what, I'm disappointed you're not here. Other Georgia fans are going to say, well, I don't care because I don't care about the Sugar Bowl. Everybody's going to feel a little bit different, and that's just where we are as a society. And we've got Twitter and Facebook and our Dog Nation chat and Dog Nation forum where everybody can just let it all out. But you know, Kirby's kind of an is-what-it-is guy, and here's what you got. They plan on going out there and beating Baylor, representing the brand, getting a top-five finish, and getting some momentum going into next year, B.A.
Yeah, Kimberly Cox says, what's everyone's thoughts on James Coley? We'll get ready to finish up with this. You had a chance to be with Coley for his press conference of the day. I wasn't in New Orleans as of yet. You know, I don't know that Coley satisfied a lot of my questions. I don't know that you could in just one press conference. But overall, what was your takeaway from getting a chance to listen to James Coley the other day?
A lot of common sense and rationale. You put the ball in the hands of your best players. That best player was DeAndre Swift. And when guys run the wrong route, your quarterback looks bad. It's pretty much that simple. And, you know, without naming any names, I mean, let's face it, there were a lot of injuries. It was a merry-go-round at receiver, as Kirby Smart said. And so much of football is about calibration and choreography. And when you've got different parts and pieces every single week, it's not going to be as smooth. It's common sense. You look at LSU, they stayed healthy. You take away LSU's top three receivers and the running back, how good do they look against Georgia in the championship game?
I guess my only point about this is, and we'll have an entire calendar year to debate this, I think there's been too much blame. If you look at the pie of blame for the Georgia offense and why it wasn't what it was supposed to be this year, I think too big of a portion of that has been given over to the wide receivers. Too much of that. And look, it's the coaches who make the millions of dollars. I'm always going to put more of the responsibility on that, on Kirby for his philosophy, on James Coley for his execution of that philosophy. I'm always going to put the lion's share of the blame on them. I never like it. I thought that Smart was guilty of this a little bit too much, of the shrugging the shoulders of, what do you want? Our wide receivers weren't very good. Now, that's not exactly what he said, but I'm essentially paraphrasing. I think one of the real mistakes in the autopsy that Georgia publicly has done itself when it comes to the offensive trouble this year, I think they blame the receivers too much. The receiving corps for Georgia Georgia needs to step up, needs to improve, and a talent upgrade, you hope, gives Georgia a chance to do that. Certainly the 2020 class has seemed to address that, but too much blame has been given to the wide receivers.
See, I got to disagree. Got to disagree because I would equate drop passes to fumbles. You see the running backs protecting the quarterback. You see the running backs protecting the ball. You see the offensive line providing good pass protection. And with the exception of two games, you see Jake Fromm making good decisions with the football. The receivers, on the other hand, because of injuries, and this is what everybody needs to understand. Yes, you can have quality depth, but as I've said, next man up, all right? George is on number 7, next man up. Let's just review here. Mecole Hardman goes pro early. Riley Ridley goes pro early. Isaac Nauta goes pro early. And Terry Godwin graduates. Those are 4 of your top 5 receivers. Number 5 receiver is J.J. Holloman. He's dismissed. 4 of those guys could have been on the team had they come back or not been dismissed. Next man up, Lawrence Cager. He's out. Next man up, Kyrus Jackson. Injured in the first game of the season, broken hand, misses half of the year, still not himself. Next man up, Demetrius Robertson, pulled hamstring. Next man up, Dominic Blaylock, true freshman, now out with a knee. Next man up, George Pickens, suspended for a half and lining up wrong 10 games into the season. This is what you have. Now, you can make the argument, B.A., that number 6, 7, and 8 should have been better prepared, and Kirby did in fact say that he should have recruited the position better. I think the offseason move to take a look for is to see if Georgia makes a move at the receivers coach position, whether it's reassigning Hankton somewhere else or firing him and hiring someone different. Because Kirby Smart does not suffer fools. He's a rolling stone, and as you said, he's going to get it fixed because he's not going to be standing up there next year saying the receivers are the problem, or then it is on him.
Yeah, that's an odd scapegoat for me, but we'll have an entire year to talk about stuff like that. It's Dog Nation Daily. It's presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. We appreciate being a part of our program today, and huge thanks to B.J. Swinney on hand with us. We've had a little bit of a technical issue in the fact that our tripod broke. B.J.'s had to do the show today without a tripod, so we certainly appreciate that. Cliff Payne and others also talking recruiting stuff in our comment section. Normally we do our R.S. Andrews cool down. Today a little bit different version of our show just because we're on the scene here in New Orleans. But Cliff Payne and others are talking about recruiting. Don't forget, Connor Riley continues to be in Orlando. Jeff Sintel on his way to San Antonio. Both the major All-Star games covered. Big announcements coming up on Thursday from Darnell Washington. Georgia fans have fingers crossed about him. Zach Evans as well. And then later in the week when it comes to Keely Ringo. So Dog Nation all over all of that. We'll obviously be talking a lot about that here on Dog Nation Daily presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia there as well. I'll remind you on the way out the door, we'll have more time for comments later on in the week. We certainly appreciate R.S. Andrews bringing the R.S. Andrews cool down to you. Don't forget that $99 furnace safety check and make sure your furnace is not just ready to keep your family warm during the winter, but also able to keep you safe there as well. So check them out online at rsandrews.com. And finally, Florida got a win last night against Virginia. But it has been a long time since those lousy, stinking Gators have beaten the Georgia Bulldogs. In fact, 1,158 days. That's our Gator Hater Updater. Even here downtown New Orleans, we're still thinking about that Gator Hater Updater. Y'all have a great day. Thanks for being with us for this special edition of Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. A lot more coverage this week to come from New Orleans. We'll look forward to talking to you then.